You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men, presented by Manscaped, an official partner of your LA Kings. Thanks to this revolutionary company, manscaping accidents are a thing of the past. Just get yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Inside, you'll find products like their Lawnmower 3.0, which is advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't cut you. Everything you need to keep trimmed and smelling nice is in the Perfect Package 3.0. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KINGSMEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com, and use the code KINGSMEN. The LA Kings opened the season going 0-0-2 against the Minnesota Wild. Now, instead of doing post-game podcasts this season, we're planning on doing post-series podcasts, and this time it gave me a chance to calm down a little after Saturday night's loss. One of the mantras of this podcast, as longtime listeners will know, is happiness is measured by expectations, and I may have been guilty of wanting two wins in the first two games a little bit too much. When the overtime goal was scored on Saturday night, I was pretty upset. I jumped in my car, I flew home, and I didn't really get over it until midday on Sunday, give or take a few hours. So, with the benefit of hindsight and with a little rust to shake off, here is our post-series podcast for the Kings and the Wild. We are no longer doing post-game podcasts because, well, frankly, I'm the only one in the building. Dave Joseph has moved on to greener pastures, Carlin Bathe has more responsibilities, and Jack Jablonski, unfortunately for the moment, not able to join me in Staples Center, but he joins me here today. How are you doing today, Jack?
I'm good. As a Minnesota native, I think two overtime games could possibly have been. So, hey, by all means, it's good to be back talking about some post games, and here we go.
I know I usually bring it up and rub your nose in it, but this particular time I was going to let it go, but you outed yourself as a Wild fan. So, but yeah, these look, we're not doing post-game podcasts. We are going to do, however, post-series podcasts, because for the majority of this season, the team will play two, if not more, games in a row against the same opponent, and I just thought it'd be more efficient to do it at the end of each series. So we're talking about the first two games about the Minnesota Wild. Jack, when I was 15 years old, it was a long, long time ago. I was 16 years old, but the buddy that I'm about to talk about, he was 15. We went on a summer trip together, along with 32 other kids our age. And we spent the first week of the trip in Italy, and we went to Rome, and we went to the Sistine Chapel. And this buddy of mine is, he's one of those, now we've still been friends these almost 20 years now. Almost 20, whatever, a long time.
Add a few years.
Yeah, exactly. but regardless, so he was one of those kids who was always doing, you know, goofball things, and he drank some holy water while we were at the Sistine Chapel, while we were at the Vatican. Oh. And we all told him, you know, don't do it, you're going to get in trouble, blah, blah, blah. He didn't get in trouble. Nobody saw him do it. And then we teased him like, oh, you're going to, you know, bad karma, right? Bad juju, right? You don't go to...
Yep.
So during the course of this trip, it was a six-week trip that we took. Very little adult supervision, clearly, since he was got away with drinking some more.
What was this trip? You got 32, 15, and 16-year-olds with no supervision?
34.
With 34 kids, no supervision.
Quote, unquote, four adults on the trip. But by quote, adults, unquote. they were like 21. Like, they were like camp counselors.
Your parents just trusted you to leave the country for 6 weeks?
Paid a lot of money for it, too. but anyway.
Sounds like a good time, but carry on.
So we told him, like, hey, man, you know, you've pissed off God, right? Like, you're gonna get it now. So during the course of the six-week trip, he got chicken pox, which somehow he had never had before.
Way.
He burned the tip of his nose off sniffing a coffee pot. He got some sort of weird... illness. We're not really sure, but he got like shakes and sweats, and he wound up having to miss a weekend or two of the trip. Like, he left the group, he had to go stay in an infirmary, and a bunch of people dyed their hair with henna to turn it black, and his turned out green. So if
you don't believe in karma,
so the point of this, of bringing up this story, was that we would point it out to him and say, ha ha, look at all the bad things that happened to you. And his response was always, No, are you kidding? I didn't die when I got sick. I only singed the tip of my nose off of this burning hot metal. I got chicken pox, but I survived, so I'm fine. And everybody will remember my green hair. And then as his life progressed, he moved to Vail, and on his trip home, moving, he'll probably be pissed at me for telling these stories, but on his trip home from moving to Vail, he drove his U-Haul moving truck under a bridge that was too short, so it sheared the top of the truck off. Then he made it home with the top of the truck missing, and it started to rain, so he and his father got a ladder off to the side of the truck to get the stuff out before it started raining and filled up the truck, and his father fell off and broke his arm. He's had all sorts of bizarre illnesses. Like, ordinarily, most people would look at his life and say, bad luck, dude. Like, just insanely bad luck. And one of the reasons that I love him and one of the things that I keeps me being friends with him is that his attitude is always, no, insanely good luck, because all of these bad things happened to me and I'm still here. None of them,
glass half full.
None of them knocked me down. And so the reason I bring all this up, the reason I frame this first episode of our post-series podcast is to say,
can we get this guy's name and social security number too?
No,
we've got his life story.
But he is the father of two wonderful children and he continues to be great. But the point is, if you told me before the season started that after two games the Kings would be 500 against the team that they are competing with for that fourth playoff spot, as unlikely as it may be that they'll get it, if you had told me before the season started that after two games Andrzej Kopitar would have 2 points, Andreas Athanasiou would have 2 points, Jeff Carter would have 4 points, Curtis McDermott would have a point, Dustin Brown would have scored his 300th goal, Blake Lizotte would have a goal, Gabe Vilardi would have a goal, the team would have scored 3 goals in both games, and heading into the third period of both games, they would have had a 2-goal lead, I would have been very pleased. I would have been perfectly happy.
I mean, everything you listed off there is something that all Kings would agree with. And, you know, I think you point out the Jeff Carter situation of looking healthy, scoring, obviously leading the team in points. Anthony Seuss, you know, no problem there in terms of getting acclimated with his line mates and obviously getting on the score sheet. But yeah, it's one of those things where all those things that you've named there are definitely points of emphasis for the Kings leading into the year that we have seen so far through two games. Obviously, there's some cons that you might list coming after this because they are 0-0-2. But hey, by all means, promising start in terms of, you know, doing the right things. Just haven't been able to put together a game of far.
So let's get into some of those negatives. And, you know, I said it after the first game. There are positives to be mined out of this, and there are negatives that you could focus on, despite the fact that as a fan, right, as an irrational, emotional fan of this franchise, I am annoyed and mad at the outcome of the first two. Jack and I are in a difficult spot here because we work for the team. And so you're not going to get our full unvarnished thoughts on what's happening. But we will try and be objective and reasonable. And if the team gives a poor performance or if there are things that need pointing out, we will attempt to do them. But no, look, giving up a 2-goal lead in the third period in back-to-back games and then losing both of them in overtime is rough.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's through, you know, obviously both games, it was deja vu because everything went exactly how it did. First, the Wild go up one, the Kings score the next three, they give up 2 goals, Wild score in overtime. But it's, you know, it's complicated because you take into consideration, you know, the amount of moving pieces that the Kings have had. You get Anthony Seu that come into camp a little bit later, signs late, you know, with the Kings. So many young prospects are pushing to make the Kings roster. So we're going to see a lot of moving pieces. But, you know, the opening day and obviously the second game roster, the Kings played well. It's a matter of, you know, was it them taking their foot off the gas pedal, or did the Wild step it up in the third period? And both games, you look at the second period, and the Kings were able to open it up. And I think, you know, you see McClellan's ability to not necessarily play run and gun offense, but they can use that speed to their advantage because they were faster than the Wild as a roster and as a team both games. That's just who the Kings are. The Wild are obviously a little bit bigger. And like to possess the puck behind, you know, the goal and, you know, work their way around the net by using their brunt size. And the Kings, you know, allowed that to happen in the third period, both games. And it costed them, unfortunately, both times.
So one of the things that I'm fascinated by, and I put it out there on social media, and I don't have an answer for this. It's just one of those things that I find interesting and curious. There's a website called moneypuck.com. And they have a thing called the deserve to win o-meter.
Yep.
And I don't know, not entirely sure how it works.
where was the meter with 3 seconds left in the second game?
Well, so this is why I bring it up. So in the first game, the deserve to win o-meter had the Kings winning 75% of the time that they simulated these games. And it's based on things like expected goals and Corsi, and, you know, and we've gone over this before, but Corsi is nothing more than shots on goal, and expected goals is a weird equation that I'm not entirely sure I agree with. But regardless, within certain communities, these things are considered the standard model. So whatever. But in the first game, the Kings were considered to have outplayed the Wild based on the deserve to win o-meter.
Okay.
So in the second game, during the second intermission, with the Kings up 3-1, I thought, all right, well, I'm just going to go look at the deserve to win o-meter, because my just naked eyeball test, sitting in the building with no telecast, I was trying not to look at my phone, trying not to look at the stats, trying to just watch the game as a fan. And look, they were up 3-1, right? Athanasiou and Carter had another 4-on-4 goal. Lazat tips in that goal from Doughty. I forget how. Oh, and Velarde's goal, right? That it wasn't clear right away that it was going. So, and I didn't think they were being particularly outplayed. I thought it all looked fine, and it was 3-1. The deserve to win-o-meter had Minnesota at like 80%, despite the fact that the Kings were up 3-1. So I don't know how much stock to put in something like that. And generally speaking, I try, although the impulse for me anyway is to say, oh, well, the Corsi is one way, and so that's how, you know, but I get it. Corsi is only like a 55% predictor or something like that. It's not. And it's just like shots on goal, right? If you outshoot your opponent 40-20, it doesn't necessarily mean you outplayed them, right? If all your shots come from the perimeter and blah. Yeah. And that's what expected goals attempts to correct for, is that your total volume of shots on goal might not be reflective of how well you played. But anyway, the point is they had Minnesota way up. And then as the period went on, I just thought, well, this is not great. But even when it was 3-2 with 10 seconds left, you know, I thought, well, gosh, they've won 3 out of 4 possible points. This is fantastic. And then that goal goes in. And I looked back on all the goals, and we're going to go through them in a second. Apologies. I don't think there's a simple explanation for what, like, I don't think you can pin it on any one line or any one pairing and say, or the goalie, or even Quick. Like, I thought Quick played great.
Yeah.
I think it's just really one of those things where hockey is sometimes random, and it's 2 games out of 56, and ultimately the Kings got 2 out of 4 points. And I know that's not particularly satisfying. But I honestly am sort of coming around to the idea that that might just be the explanation. It's a small sample size, it's early, and crazy things happen.
Yeah, well, a few things here. I think it goes back to what you mentioned at the beginning. You know, all these good things happened. We have 2 points out of 4. You know, the expectation, and I'm going to go to your cliche, which should be written on your tombstone. happiness is measured by expectation. And
yep.
You know, the Kings were in position where they could have had 4 points. They obviously end with 2, but not necessarily in any which way that anyone could have predicted. The things that the Kings are doing right is what led them to the 3-1 lead in both of the games. What we saw in the first two games is something that I think we're going to see a little bit more of in terms of not necessarily like lapses in a period where they blow two goal leads, but with the amount of moving pieces and this roster in its, you know, transition phase to a different style than LA Kings hockey is used to, you know, I think you're going to see games where, you know, they go up and they a lot more back and forth type of games because of the style that McClellan plays. And, you know, frankly, it's a lot of fun to watch, but at the same time, you know, there's a reason that we have, you know, 85% of the roster returning from last year's team that won, you know, that was 27th in the NHL out of 31.
I want to go ahead and look through the goals just to sort of highlight what I mean when I say they're not anybody's fault, or they're not, they all seven goals to me felt a little out of the blue, right? Like sort of lightning strikes in an otherwise, I mean, they really did, as far as I'm concerned, feel like Minnesota Wild LA Kings games have for the last couple of years.
They're always tightly contested. Yeah. And these two teams, although they play slightly different styles, especially now, I think the games were a little bit more, you know, mirror images of themselves prior to the McClellan hiring. And you look at, you know, by no means is it a rivalry, but these two teams are slowly becoming more competitive against each other, if that's the right way to put it. Mm-hmm. They definitely were LA Kings, Minnesota Wild games based on what we've seen in the past. But, you know, at the same time, they were competitive games. And, you know, you're right. It wasn't one of those times where, you know, someone really screwed up and someone took advantage of it. They were definitely goals where, you know, you've got a team making the right play all of a sudden and it ends up in the back of the net, or, you know, if that makes a little bit more sense, Jesse.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and go through them. The first goal of the series scored by Jonas Brodin for Minnesota, burying a loose puck from the slot.
Now in on right wing, the rookie Kaprizov can't get a shot. Now Brodin does and scores. Well, after Kirill Kaprizov couldn't get a shot through to Quick, it deflected to Brodin at the left circle, and Brodin roofed it on Jonathan Quick. And veteran Jonas Brodin has started the scoring here tonight at 16:06 of the first period. The Wild up 1-0.
Okay, so we've got that first goal there, and, you know, it's a nice pass up the wall. It beats Anderson. Maybe he should have been able to interrupt the pass, but Kaprizov breaks in, goes to the middle, and Lizotte essentially crashes into Quick, knocking Quick out of position while Carter sort of sells out his spot defensively to try and take the shooter, or maybe it's the passer. I don't exactly remember, but the point is, like, to me, that's not a goal that I blame on anybody, right? Like, Lizotte stumbled and fell into Quick, and okay, he scored. Like, okay, fine. So I don't think there's a ton to break down on that play. Also, Mikey Anderson, you know, essentially a rookie, so...
He's a rookie. Yeah. And, you know, that first goal, it's just, you know, the Wild with Kaprizov, who is, you know, the favorite to win the Calder this year. He's one guy on the Wild that, you know, they can't allow to beat them. And obviously that's going to be something that a lot of teams are going to start to game plan around, focusing on Kaprizov. You know, the first goal is a great example of that, of him being able to stretch the ice, which is something that the Wild aren't necessarily known for doing. Mm-hmm. He gets behind Anderson, obviously creates a play with a lot of traffic going to the net. You know, the puck ends up on Brodin's stick, but at the same time, you know, you've got Wild players going to the net. You've got everyone, you know, semi-positionally sound on the Kings, and, you know, unfortunately a loose puck just bounces to a guy skating into the zone with room and space.
Right, while Lizotte is barreling into Quick. I mean, like, yes. Whatever, he fell. Next up is Jeff Carter scoring right off the faceoff.
Kopitar will try and win the draw, and off the draw, puck it on! Goal save, score on the rebound! Jeff Carter on the rebound. Right off the draw, Kopitar had his stick tied up, but the puck deflected in on Talbot. He made the save, and Carter was there to knock it home. And the game is tied at one.
And again, like that, like, good for Jeff Carter, good for Andrzej Kopitar, good for the coaching staff if they drew that up. But that is a split-second goal with 4 seconds left in period, and I named it the play of the game before game two. But again, not a result of dominant zone possession, not a result of Minnesota making some sort of crucial error. Like, it was just a goal off of a faceoff, and a great goal, right? Like if I was Minnesota, I mean, I'd be mad that they scored it. But again, I don't think absolutely. There's much to take from it.
Yeah, it's a lapse on Minnesota, but for the Kings, you know, hey, by all means, if you can take advantage of, you know, a faceoff with, you know, X amount of seconds remaining, Carter did a great job. You go to the net hard, and that's exactly what, you know, coaches should be teaching young kids. You play to the whistle and you play to the end of the buzzer.
Yeah. Next goal, Athanasiou and Jeff Carter 4-on-4. This goal is pure speed.
Quick sends it around the wall. The Kings to center, Carter. Carter through center in the zone to the right circle with a shot kicked out. Rebound, score! Andreas Athanasiou.
First goal for Athanasiou, and, you know, again, this is why they got him, right? Because he's going to be able to burn pass guys, and Carter can also burn. And so there you go. Two fast guys, 4-on-4, tons of space to maneuver, turns into a goal.
Yeah, I mean, this has been the most impressive line so far, and boy, have they been fun to watch. Obviously, I think you look at the lineup, and, you know, some people who haven't necessarily been paying the closest attention to training camp and the early part of the Kings season here, Lizotte's been a great centerman. He fits right in with both Carter and both Carter and Athanasiou for this line. They've been fast, and he's been able to create opportunities. In this play specifically, it's just great to see Jeff Carter and Athanasiou use their speed, which Carter hasn't been able to do lately, and you know, obviously that the long off season has been something that he's been able to take advantage of, and here we go, we've got a healthy Jeff Carter, and Athanasiou, aka Grease Lightning, is has been able to, you know, put himself on the Kings map early in his career.
Next goal up is Dustin Brown's 300th, which we all thought was Adrian Kempe's when it happened.
Kopitar at the right circle, a shot pass, tipped on, save is made, rebound loose behind the net, they score! Dustin Brown! And for Dustin Brown, that will be career goal number 300. The initial save on the shot up high by Talbot was stopped. The puck wound up behind the net, and Brown, with a quick wraparound chance, beats Talbot, and the Kings have a 3-1 lead.
So again, Kopitar takes the shot in. It sort of bounces around. Talbot's out of position. Brown winds up with it around behind the net. It's a scramble. Again, sort of a bolt of lightning goal on the power play, so that was good. Kings controlled possession, but again, not something that I take a ton away from.
No, it's just not to say it's a typical Dustin Brown goal, but hey, it's Dustin Brown, you know, taking the puck to the net and being able to obviously create offense with it. You know, he's got 300 for a reason, and, you know, not a whole lot to take away. It's just the Kings doing the right things around the net. And, you know, obviously it's Dustin Brown's goal, but hey, you've got to give credit to Kempe, who's going to the net, who's right there ready Definitely. To tap it in.
So now we're going to get to the three goals that they gave up to lose the lead and lose the game. We're going to start out with the Rask's goal, his first of the year.
Foligno, or rather Kaprizov, feeds the middle. Rask a shot, and he scores! Zach Parise was screening Jonathan Quick at the top of the goal crease. I don't know if Parise got a piece of it, but that shot from about 35 feet straight out sneaks in, and it's a one-goal game.
Look, Luff screens the goalie a little bit on that one. Doughty's out front doing his job. Mata maybe should have, you know, broken up. Maybe he should have been a little bit stronger on the man. But at the end of the day, like, you're not going to shut out your opponent every game. You know, most teams are going to be able to score two goals. And the goalie was screened. It was a nice shot. Like, if that was a goal for the Kings, we're not sitting here beating up Jonathan Quick for allowing that goal. Sorry, if the Kings had scored that goal against Minnesota Wild, we're not saying, oh, Cam Talbot, what a terrible goal. Oh, the Kings, blah, blah. We're saying, like, oh, nice play. Right, like, okay, good.
it goes back to you talking about how, you know, Jonathan Quick had a very impressive start to his two games in this season. Hey, you know, Zach Parise is known for being a guy who goes to the net and causes havoc. It works out in the Wild's favor, and you know, Rask puts one on the board early for him and in his new, not his new jersey, but hey, he's been a hot seat in Minnesota. Who cares? This is an LA Kings podcast. but overall, yeah, you're right about that. Yeah. It's, you know, Quick, can't blame him. He did what he was supposed to do, and it ended up going through him.
Yeah. And like I said, Luff was screening him. Next goal, the tying goal from Foligno with 9:42 in the third.
Play underway. Foligno in the slot, a shot, and he scores. Marcus Foligno from about 20 feet in the slot in front of Jonathan Quick slaps it into the low left corner. And all of a sudden, a 3-1 Kings lead is now a 3-3 tie.
So we've got sort of a weak clearing attempt. Brown misses the opportunity to get the puck out of the zone. And then after that, it's just a sequence of bad bounces. And so this is sort of what I'm getting at by bringing all these up, is that what really burned the Kings, it feels like to me, and you heard Kopitar and McClellan talk about it in the postgame, it's not prolonged bad plays. It's not right that the team didn't play well. It's momentary lapses of judgment or a failure to execute right full effort for the full 65 minutes. And there's a reason those cliches exist. And it's goals like that one that are exactly why, right? Because that goal, if you look at the 3 seconds surrounding the goal, you know, you can see Doughty and Mata 2 feet away from the goal mouth. And you know, they don't know what's happening. The puck is bouncing and everything. But I don't think it's necessarily either one of their fault per se, but we used to get mad, Kings fans that is, used to get mad in the late 90s because there were a ton of players on the team that would do this sort of thing time and time again, and that's why the team never won any games, and even, you know, the middle of the season was boring, not 4-3, you know, overtime losses, which are at least entertaining. So, you know, whatever. Like I said, McClellan and Kopitar and the rest of them have addressed it, but it's just those momentary little lapses that a team like Minnesota is going to capitalize on.
Yeah, and a lot of teams in the NHL are going to capitalize on it. You know, this is the NHL, and momentary lapses are exactly the plays that get you beat. Fortunately, the Kings, it comes down to momentary lapses and then skill in the roster. And for the Kings, you know, it looks like they have enough skill on this roster and in the AHL and on the taxi squad to be able to compete, you know, hopefully for a playoff spot. Unfortunately, in this situation, the failed to clear, it sets everyone up for disaster, because, you know, when you think you're going one way and all of a sudden it's going the other way, everyone turns out to be out of position. Foligno kind of just turns and whips it towards the net, and it goes, you know, fluttering through, obviously throwing Quick for a changeup. But hey, it's not what you want to see, but hey, it's the beginning of the year. They haven't had any preseason games. Hopefully these will be things that they can clear up. As you mentioned, McClellan and Kopitar addressed it. So hopefully when they get Colorado on Tuesday, those things will be cleaned up.
I do want to at least acknowledge this too, because I have heard Nick Nixon, Darrell Evans, Jim Fox, Alex Faust, Todd McClellan, Andre Kopitar, Dustin Brown, Drew Doughty. I've heard everybody say it, and I do want to just acknowledge this because the voice in my head won't let me ignore it. Minnesota didn't get any preseason games either.
Yep.
And Minnesota, you know, they got a little bit of quote-unquote playoff hockey in a few months ago, but that was a few months ago. That, of course, brings us to the Kaprizov goal in overtime.
Brown to Doughty, and ahead to Brown at center on right wing, and back to Doughty. Look out, picked off, a breakaway. Kaprizov to win it, Deeks, and scores!
And this is one of those goals, like, when a team loses 10-2, I prefer it to when they lose 4-3, because when you lose 10-2, there's just nothing to be said. But one of the things I do like about this Kaprizov goal, and I barely like it, and it's the only thing.
Him
is
kicking
really
it?
he should have been illegal. But no, there's just nothing to say about it, right? Brown misplayed the puck, and then Doughty dove and took himself out of the play, and that's it. An incredibly skilled rookie with a breakaway.
Yeah, scored. It's, okay. You know, like you said, in the previous goal, it's a, you know, 3 seconds of a bad decision that leads to a poor drop pass with an out-of-position Doughty who thinks he's going one way. And yeah, you look at Kaprizov, who just uses his speed, takes the puck, gets around, and makes a play on Quick that, you know, Quick, you can't blame him. It's a puck that doesn't go in normally by any means. And hey, I understand your frustration with a 4-3 loss compared to a 10-2 loss, but the one good thing about 4-3 is they were able to get a point out of it.
Yeah, so now we're going to move on to game two real quick. That started off, what, 30 seconds in? 21
no.
seconds in.
Yeah, me. Like 10.
Matt Dumba scoring.
Freak
total goal. Fluke goal.
Minnesota wins the draw. Dumba feeds the high slot. Controlled by Greenway to Dumba and tight. A shot, and they score! It was deflected in front, I believe, off one of the Wild players at the top of the goal crease. Matt Dumba carried the puck down to the goal line on right wing, threw it towards Quick and the goal, and it was deflected in. And just 21 seconds into the game, Minnesota's up 1-0.
That's one of those goals where I'm just never going to blame anybody, right? It bounces off of, what is it? It bounces off of McDermott's stomach, then off of Quick, then off of something, like then bounces just straight to some dude's stick. You know, like, what are you going
to
do?
That's exactly why everyone just says, you know, throw it on net, go to the net hard. And
yeah. Exactly.
You know, McDermott was the one who would end up going off of. Obviously, you know, Dumba throws it to the net. It goes off Quick shoulders, bounces off the back of McDermott's legs, and in the net. And hey, it's a fluke play, as you mentioned. It's something that, you know, every coach is going to preach is just throw it to the net. You never know what can happen. And it's just one of those lucky instances that went the Wild's way to start the game.
And now look, this will piss you off, but had Minnesota not scored three more goals, right, late in the third period, up 3-1,
yeah.
I was thinking to myself, oh, look, Jonathan Quick has a shutout. Because that
yes,
I wouldn't have counted that goal.
Yes, to all the listeners who have been here forever and to the new ones, Jesse likes to give the goalies shutouts when they give up one
sorry,
goal.
Yeah,
it wasn't necessarily someone that...
that's right.
Should have scored.
That's right. So the next goal is Gabe Vilardi's goal.
Between the circles, fed out to McDermott. Sends it down low. Shot. Wagner hit the post. The rebound goes in, but the net is dislodged. This is going to be interesting. Will it count? The original shot by Wagner from between the circles hit the post. The puck, the Kings thought the puck was in, but the net was dislodged. And they'll talk it over. Here we go.
Upon video review, the puck did cross the goal line. Therefore, we have a good goal.
And again, that's just a total fluke play. There was some question as to whether or not it was even going to go in. But nice to see Vilardi get on the board. Next goal up, Blake Lizotte gets credit for a goal that I don't think he should.
Lizotte moves into the right corner. Hands the puck off. But Kaprizov is there, works it up the boards, kept in right point. Doughty shoots, and he scores! Drew Doughty let the shot go from the right point. It looked like it bounced in front of the goaltender. Talbot went in, and the Kings have their first lead tonight. First goal of the young season for veteran Drew Doughty, and the Kings are up 2-1.
Is this going to be one of your new hot takes of...
Absolutely.
If it goes in...
Add it to the list.
If it nicks your shin pad or, you know, deflects off of you when you're not paying attention, that you shouldn't get the goal?
Yep.
All right. Fair enough.
That's... I'm just... Add it to the list.
Yep. At whatever... What's the... At Kingsman podcast? Is that...
Yeah, exactly.
Tell them what you think.
Then we have another 4-on-4 goal, courtesy of Jeff Carter and Andreas Athanasiou.
And now Carter up with a loose puck in the zone to Athanasiou. Back to Carter in a backhander. Save, rebound, score! A 2-on-1 developed between those two forwards. Carter had a backhander that was kicked out, but Athanasiou buries the rebound. 3-1 Kings.
And we said everything we need to say about the two of them. Nice pairing. Now we get back to giving up two-goal leads in the third period with a goal from Eriksson Ek with 7:38 into the third period.
Patter and a shot. Save. Rebound. Score. Eriksson Ek. The Kings got caught on a line change. Patter and moved in the zone on right wing. Took the shot. It was kicked out. And Eriksson Ek pops it home. And it's a one-goal Kings lead. 3-2 Kings.
Okay, this goal is maybe, I wouldn't even say it's the most frustrating one, but this is just an instance of a team gets caught in their own zone for literally a minute and a half. The defenseman, mm-hmm. I believe Alex Faust on the broadcast said that the two defensemen were in there for a minute and 44 seconds, which is essentially over a minute longer than any shift should be in the NHL, ideally. They get caught on a change, and you know, it's a great play by Patterson. when you got guys going to the net, hitting the pad pass, and hey, it went in the net. So that's just kudos to the other team on being able to take advantage of a tired team. And, you know, unfortunately, the Kings were on the receiving end.
And again, a bad change, right? And McClellan addressed it directly. He said, right, he doesn't blame the guys coming off. They're tired. He blames the guys coming on. They need to pay attention. They need to be aware. And I think on that play, you had McDermott, Velarde, Kempe, Wagner, and Walker out on the ice. And Velarde does his best to tie up his guy. Unfortunately, there's a guy right behind him who's there to parry it. So, you know, again, this is one of those things where Peterson, Walker, and McDermott don't get to finish camp. They don't get to be on the team for the first game. Blah, blah, blah. There's a million excuses, but at the end of the day, it's a bad line change. And after, like as you said, prolonged zone possession by Minnesota. And that brings us to the backbreaker, the heartbreaker, the awful goal with 2 seconds left in the game, courtesy of Matt Dumba.
Pass on left wing. Chipped into the zone by Bonino. 5 seconds left. A battle. The puck winds up on the slot. Suter shoots, and he scores! 0.3 seconds left on the clock. And Ryan Suter, with a wrist shot from the top of the left circle, will force overtime here tonight. The goal at 19:59 has tied the game at 3.
Again, it stinks, and it's another one of those goals where if Doughty hits the open net instead of rings it off the post, you know, it's 4-2, and we're not having this conversation. 4-2 for the Kings,
yeah.
And we're not having this conversation. It's another one of those half-inch plays that we've already talked about, so we don't need to dwell on it.
Yeah.
Good for the Minnesota Wild. And then the overtime goal to win it again from, is it Johansson? Johansson? Well, we're going to take a listen to it either way.
Johansson holding. Feeds it back in the middle to Brodin. And a Kaprizov for Johansson. One times it and scores! The Minnesota Wild, for the second straight game, have rallied from a 2-goal third period deficit to tie the game in regulation and win it in overtime.
Now, I've heard a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say that. I've seen two people. Seen two people criticize Sean Walker for not playing his man closer in that overtime, and I really just disagree with that criticism. You know, it was the puck fluttered, right? Quick was going to make it say the save.
It's a fluky goal, and, you know, you, when you put yourselves in a position to play 3-on-3 hockey, it's going to open up. You know, the Kings had their opportunities earlier. The Wild had their opportunities as well in overtime. And again, it's just a matter of the Wild ended up with two, you know, more, I'm trying to think of the words here, but they ended up with two more fresh guys on the ice against a Kings group that had been chasing the puck around for a little bit of time. And all of a sudden, Kaprizov makes a play, opens up, you know, Johansson for a one-timer. It was a nice play, but again, you can't blame Quick for the goal. It flutters essentially over him as Quick, you know, goes to make what would be a normal save. Unfortunately, the puck didn't do that, and, you know, no one's to blame there. But another bounce, just like the first goal for the Wild, that went their way.
Well, here's where the fan in me rears his ugly head.
Okay.
You say there's no one to blame. I was watching that overtime, and the players looked exhausted to me, and I have seen people on social media and on message boards say that they could hear the Minnesota players shouting to each other, they're tired, talking about the LA Kings.
Yeah.
I only bring that up because, as I pull up the time on ice statistics for your LA Kings, over the course of 2 games, both of which went to overtime, so we're talking about more than 120 possible minutes, but no more than 130 possible minutes, Drew Doughty played 56 minutes and 34 seconds, and Andrei Kopitar played 48 minutes and 31 seconds. That is too much.
Yes, and
that is just
to give you more insight, I was doing some research, and Kopitar, who... It's a little bit contradicting, I guess, because we've talked about how the Kings are, quote-unquote, deeper, or they're going to roll 4 lines a little bit more. you know, they have more trust in the bottom six guys.
Nope.
And Kopitar is now the third through two games. Kopitar has been on the ice, averages the third most among forwards in the NHL, which, you know, you understand if there's power plays, he's going to be out there. He's a good penalty killer as well. But 24 minutes is a little too much for a forward, especially when you're at the beginning of the season. You know, everyone's conditioning is a little bit different. You never know. But it's something to keep an eye on moving forward to see where the trust level is with the bottom six and if they're going to keep ride or die mentality with Kopitar and potentially Doughty as well.
Yeah, in the second game, I believe. No, sorry, in the first game, Drew Doughty played 29 minutes. Andrei Kopitar played 23 minutes, 28 seconds. Matt Roy, Olli Maatta, and Mikey Anderson all played fewer minutes than Andrei Kopitar, but more than Iafallo and Brown. I understand them not wanting Cale Clegg and Mark Ault to have to carry a lot of weight, although, frankly, I thought Ault and Clegg were fine. I saw a lot of criticisms of them, but we don't need to get into that. Mark Ault has been assigned to Ontario, and we'll see what happens with Cale Clegg. I'm not going to judge him on one game, but the point is there's just an awful lot of minutes. And then I'm going to try and very quickly pull up the next game. And, you know, the team, I mean, look, one of the things that I didn't include at the top when I said if you listed all the positives, they didn't allow a power play goal.
And they had, eight or nine opportunities? No, probably more.
I think 12. I think like 11 or 12.
Yeah.
That's great.
Why didn't you mention that in the beginning?
I meant to. I had it on my list. I forgot. But it's one of those things where, you know, for every penalty kill that Andrei Kopitar is out there for or Drew Doughty is out there for, it does lead to them being tired in overtime. And one of the questions that I have, and listen, I'm just a guy with a mic. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I feel like it has to be at least given lip service. You know, when Mike Amadio is on the second power play unit but not killing penalties and Andrei Kopitar is playing 50 minutes over two games, I think you have to then ask yourself, you know, how effective was their training camp, right? The penalties they're taking are too many men on the ice. You know, they're lazy hooking penalties when they're getting beat in the corner because they're chasing their guy down. And I understand penalties are up all around the league, so I'm trying not to be too – and I don't want to be too harsh, right? I don't want to be that guy who's like, oh, this team's terrible. But the coaching staff needs to tighten up the team play before, you know, as the season progresses. And I don't say that to be critical. It's just an observation, right? If the coach's complaints after the game are, you know, the team wasn't ready to go in the third or overtime, the focus was off, the penalties are too much, and it's not – you know, and it's not acceptable. Like, I get it. That's his job to say those things to get to the players, but it's also the coaching staff's job to make sure that those things happen.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, I think, you know, as you previously mentioned in the pod, like, this is exactly as, you know, as much as you and I can kind of say. It's, you know, it's unacceptable when you have multiple too many men, you know, penalties. You know, I think maybe you normally see that with a normal training camp in an 82-game season, what, maybe five times across the whole year you get too many men on the ice, 5 to 10? You know, it's a rare penalty, and that's just miscommunication behind the bench or among the players on who's up when, or, you know, just the common sense of, you know, I think Jim Fox, you know, dotted up like 9 players on the ice at once changing. So, you know, it's complacency a little bit on the players if they're getting out too soon or not hustling off the ice. But yeah, it's up to the coaching staff to be able to adjust that. They've got a tough go with Colorado coming into town, especially coming off of an 8-0 game against St. Louis. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where the compete level is, but most importantly, you know, if they've tightened up those little mistakes that costed the Kings, you know, 4 to 5 power plays and, you know, 8 or 9 power plays that were essentially preventable.
Yeah. And listen, I've said it a dozen times. I'll say it again right now. None of this, right? I am choosing to look at this and be positive, right? They've scored 3 goals in 2 games. Athanasiou and Carter appear to have great chemistry. I'm not entirely sure I love Lizotte as the center of that line. Mm-hmm. I have questions about Velarde, Kempe, and Wagner as a line.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure I understand what the point of the four. I mean, I like Amadio. I'm one of those people who likes Amadio. And I also like Matt Luff and Trevor Moore, but I'm not sure that it is the most efficient use of the assets that the team has. All of that having been said, they were still up two goals against Minnesota in back-to-back games. It's like, they're fine.
It's great that you listed all of that off, because those are the question marks that obviously are on top of your head, but might as well. You know, what is the point of the fourth line right now? How do they plan on using the assets when, mm-hmm. say, Byfield they think is ready, or Kaliev is potentially ready? Where do they slot in? You know, I think the loss of Firk really affected Velarde's line chemistry-wise. Mm-hmm. Lizotte, again, you know, I mentioned that he's been impressive. That's more so been in training camp. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if he can compete with other teams' first and second lines, because as a centerman, you know, this league is often built with success through a solid four centers, and usually of size. Can he keep up with some of the bigger guns? You know, he ran into Quick once and it costed him a goal. But at the same time, there's a few question marks that obviously we've both raised. And yeah, you're right. 2 points out of four and all of these little things that we want to kind of find out a little bit more of or are, you know, calling out. We'll see what happens in the future. But overall, again, you know, we go back to, hey, 2 points out of four. We'll take it right now.
Yeah. And, you know, As Pollyannish and Homerish as this might be, the Kings are the one who beat the Kings, right? They lost because they didn't, quote unquote, put in the 60 minute. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, you have to pay attention and blah, 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 blah. So they got to tidy it up. They got to clean it up. There's a ton of positives to take away from this. All the Kings fans on the edge saying, you know, oh, we're going to go 0-0-56. Like, don't worry about it. For me personally, heading into the Colorado series, here's what I would like to see, Jack, and I'm curious what you think about it. I like Austin Wagner. I like Adrian Kempe. I love Gabe Velarde. I'm curious about the use of that line. But what I would really like to see, since Kempe and Wagner have outstanding speed,
yep.
I saw about probably five or six times in the second game against Minnesota, either Kempe or Wagner gain the zone all by themselves, two Minnesota guys, you know, trailing in their wake. And rather than try and freeze the goalie with a move, rather than try and, you know, gain the zone, control the puck, move behind the net, wait for their teammates to gain the zone with them, they quickly fired the puck on net. And the puck either missed the net, sailed around the boards, and it was a rush the other direction towards the Kings net, or the goalie made the save and kicked out the rebound to a Minnesota defender at the far point on the opposite side of the ice, and then there was another rush up the zone. So that is what I am looking for in Game 3 against the Cobb, much better team than the Minnesota Wild, is when Wagner and Kempe gain the zone, and they will get their opportunities, right? Like, they have the speed, they have the ability.
Yep.
Just take, and I tweeted it out, I didn't explain myself, but I said, use your speed to slow down the game. And that's what I'd be very curious to see if they can do, is when you have that advantage, don't be so eager to give it away. And that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. And it's a matter of, you know, sometimes, you know, I think in Wagner's experience in the NHL, we've seen that sometimes he's almost too fast for himself. And he's not been able to make necessarily the right play, or hasn't been able to finish on breakaways, whether it's his speed or something else is to be determined and up for debate with whoever you want to talk about it with. But overall, you know, the Kings have multiple players, like you've talked about, in Wagner, in Kempe, in Athanasiou, even in Carter this year, who can create plays for themselves and for others solely because of their speed. It's a matter of, can they take advantage of that? You saw what Jeff Carter was able to do on Athanasiou's first mm-hmm. goal, just able to blow by the defenseman, get Suter out of position, rip it off the pad for a pass, and let Athanasiou, who uses his speed to mm-hmm. get by Dumba, and score the goal. So you look at two more veteran players, obviously Carter at 36 and Athanasiou, who's younger but has more experience in the NHL than both Kempe and Wagner, who were able to use it to their advantage. You know, can the younger guys learn and be able to make that adjustment to get in the zone, keep possession of the puck, and allow a team like Colorado to play in their own zone, who obviously love to run and gun more so than almost every team in the league with the talent and the skill that they have up front.
Yeah. So, look, it's early. The Kings are getting their sea legs underneath them. Jack and I are remembering how to do post-game, or in this case, post-series podcast together. It's a work in process, but we appreciate your patience, Kings fans. And look, two down, 54 more to go. Hopefully better outcomes than the ones we've got. Jack, thanks for joining me.
Always. Thanks for having me, and go Kings.
Go Kings.
Now that we've gotten by the Wild.
Yeah. Go Kings, only go. Six more games for in the next 19 for you to root for the Wild. Thanks for listening, Kings fans. We'll talk to you soon.